Well, that's true. You won't hear it from other sources, but I think what she means is something much stronger than that. It's not just that you don't have the chance to hear about it in other places, so that's why she's talking about it. I think that this is all there is. There only are realities, so it's the only absolute truth there is, because all other kinds of kusala, they are actually micha patipada. It's only the teaching of Satipatthana that leads out of samsara. So whether it's a common or rare teaching, it's actually the only truth there is. So even when one's talking about jhana or dana or metta, these are just more dhammas to be understood.
Because mostly people who are...
These teachers should be criticized because...
Yes, that's why I noted...
Who are following another practice are convinced that it is right.
Konsuchin was just saying that the text says that teacher should be criticized because his students didn't pay any attention. So he should be criticized because he couldn't encourage them to pay any attention, or because he was teaching those who weren't interested.
He should know to whom.
Mm-hmm. So even if it's an arahant, he can be criticized.
He should know to whom to teach.
Right. Satipatthana is only for those with accumulation. So if you're teaching Satipatthana to people that aren't interested, that's when you should be criticized. Kind of what you mean?
Like you now, criticize a lot.
Are we criticized?
By many people?
Yes.
Yes.
But praise and blame are worldly conditions, aren't they?
Yes.
So they're just something. Sorry, I wanted to come back. The thing about meditation is that all kinds of meditation practice that I have experienced, the practice is for attaining something. That's the whole point. And many people, I find, like myself, become disillusioned after a while with a practice where you don't seem to be getting anywhere, you don't seem to be making any progress. Now, what I found is that the teachers who follow one particular practice, it has obviously worked and benefited them, and they assume that it will benefit and work for anybody. But I can't see that. Even in a classroom, the same approach doesn't work for all the students. You have to try to present the thing in different ways. And the same with practice. Different kinds of practice bring different kinds of benefits to people, and so on and so forth. I get a lot of peace of mind just by going back to Vedana all the time, going back to sensation when I'm sitting or doing something. It's a kind of base to operate from. But it's this feeling of discouragement, disillusionment, and I've seen it in so many meditators, that they start off very enthusiastic about practice and so on and so on, and then they gradually become more and more disillusioned. Because there are these expectations, the Vipassana jhanas are all laid out and so on and so forth. And the Buddha sat down, I will not move from this spot until I have attained full enlightenment. He made a decision to do that. I mean, I certainly started off with the idea that if I walked and sat enough, I'd become enlightened. Because we come from cultures where the Protestant work ethic is ingrained, and you think that if you do anything long enough or hard enough, you're bound to be successful.
I don't think it's anything to do with Western or Eastern. I think they're just the same problems here for Thai people or for Burmese people or for anyone. I think there's very little understanding about what Vedana means, what Vipassana means, what the impediments are, which you mentioned listing, what the Vipassana jnanas are. People don't really consider what is the meaning of nama and rupa, and how there really has to be a very clear understanding of the distinction between nama and rupa in the beginning, and that dhammas are anatta, so it can never just be a question of concentrating or focusing on Vedana or any other dhamma, because there's always an idea there of selecting an object and of having a certain result. So of course there will be disillusionment.
No, you're quite right.
Sorry.
What would you like to get?
Actually, I don't know now.
Without knowing what we are looking for, if it's the right understanding of what? If it's not a reality right now. So what is meant by meditation? It's just having no understanding at all. Just follow. Follow what? Not knowing what.
Well, they're given this explanation that meditation is a practice that allows you to observe the reality.
What is the practice? What is meant?
A way of noting by...
Noting what?
Noting concepts.
No understanding again.
I don't think most people realize how far the Buddha's development of understanding had gone, how incredibly deep his understanding was, nothing like us.
When it's not... yeah, would you like to have it? Would you like to get?
Well, I've got it all of the rest.
So if there is no understanding about practice, why does one practice?
Or to trying to get something.
What?
Well, if you don't know it's what. Different for everyone.
Yes, but
yeah.
If you don't know what, how can we get it? We don't know.
It's an idea, I think. So you talk to a lot of people and they just, that's the way you're supposed to do it and that's how you're gonna...
But that's not the teachings of the Buddha.
But they don't know. They think it is because they don't study. They don't listen. Therefore, they have wrong understanding of the teaching of the Buddha by somebody's interpretation of what they're doing.
So they have their practice disease.
Do you think that when we refer to the development of kusala, we need to be far-sighted in any way? Because we always talk about, it just comes back to this moment, but yet at the same time, what accumulates today, the kusala or kusala, has long-term effects on and on. So should we in that sense be...
Avicca accumulated?
Very long time.
So what about the accumulation of panya today?
Will have its effect for a long time. So in this sense, we should be far-sighted?
Patient.
Okay, yeah. So by far-sighted, because I've heard you mention far-sighted, it means patient. Okay.
I'd just like to clarify something. There are three terms, anusaya, asawa, and kilesa. Now, I am still confused because anusaya is usually used in a negative sense, yeah, as something that is like deep-seated defilement or something like this. I don't understand the difference between those three terms properly.
In other words, anusaya, pariyutana, and vitikkama, three levels of akusala.
Three levels, you mean in terms of
strength?
Depth or...
So strong. The strongest one is vitikkama. And less than that is pariyutana. And the latest or the latent tendencies are anusaya.
But are anusaya necessarily akusala?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. But they're not yet manifesting, so it's just lying dormant. It's the underlying tendencies. So now there is still the underlying tendency for dosa, but no anger appearing.
Oh,
at this
I
moment.
See. And then when it appears, then it's kilesa.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Where one is fast asleep, is there anusaya or no asuya at no? What
no. Okay.
Yeah, ready to arise when there are conditions. But after seeing, who knows that akusala has arisen? And that is asava. That's why in sutta it says no asava for arahata, which means no anusaya. But since anusaya has no conditions to arise, but asava arises by conditions. But so very weak.
Very weak.
Mm-hmm. The weakest.
For example, seeing visible object, already asava has arisen.
Right.
Yes.
And then akusala comes later, that's kilesa.
When it's strong enough to know that it's akusala. So many people think that how can there be akusala after seeing?
Yeah, that's already a kusala. But I'm talking about the, say, the mind or after that, that's...
That which one cannot see easily is asava.
Okay.
But klesa refers to all akusalas or
something. What meaning of klesa?
It depends on the classification of akusala by way of prayutana or vitikama or anusya. Or so, by way of the nine, like the asava, kantha, okha, nivarana.
But kilesa is also one of those limited classifications.
Yeah, ten.
So sometimes
kilesa,
it's only ten, and sometimes at all. Mm-hmm. Did you say the anusya are the weak ones or the asava?
The asava.
Asava, yes.
The latent tendency is anusya, while one is fast asleep, ready to condition akusala
chitta. So we can't say they're weak or strong. That's the whole totality of the accumulated kilesa. That
but it's the weakest because they're not even manifesting at that moment.
It's not like when you are very angry.
No.
This is the way to classify.
When you are very angry.
Prayutana.
Right.
Then you do not have anyone.
You may have strong accumulations for lobha, but they are not manifest at that time. They are anusya.
Anusya is always there.
Other time when you have attachment, this potentially strong anger is not manifest either. So it's anusya.
Even the weak one does not arise when citta is lobha.
So it's weak or strong in terms of manifestation. So it does not manifest, therefore that's weak, anusya.
Anusya does not show up at all.
Yes.
But after seeing, it's not anusya anymore.
It's asava.
It is asava. So there are four kinds of asava. Five of nivarana, or six, or ten sanyojana, kilesa, or seven, see.
So knowing about the anusya helps or aids in the understanding that akusala can arise any time.
Okay. And because only makkajitta can eradicate anusya. Since anusya is eradicated, no more that kind of akusala can arise. That's why satipatthana is the way to eradicate anusya completely. Because it's the development of understanding reality which appears, which one used to take for self or mind. No more when it's completely eradicated by sotapatimatta.
Are you familiar with a term? What was that term in the sutta we've been discussing? Adhittana something anusya. So in this sense, adhittana is used like foundation. Foundation for anusya.
Asava can be, but not adhittana. Asava. Mm.
This is one phrase, adhittana something anusya.
Like resolution?
No. It's another meaning of adhittana. Adhittana meaning foundation.
They think that tana can be foundation, but I don't know adi.
And carrying on with this comment about being patient with accumulations, how long they can take, and far-sighted in the sense of patience, we become more clever about evaluating our circumstances, the friends we have, and judging whether surroundings and friends are favorable for the development of wholesomeness or not. And when we make comments like this about evaluating circumstances and friends, we all know what we mean. Obviously, it's better to be with good friends or hearing the Dharma, but actually, whether we're here or somewhere else...
Is that not banyan to know who's who? Where's where?
It is, but on the other hand, we can say it's also just conditioned whether we're with this friend or...
When there is banyan, it's all right, but when there is no banyan yet...
Yes. So it's just referring to panya. I think I see a little bit of a danger because if one's with other friends or in other situations, it's useless to think it would be better to be with Dharma friends or in a different place because wherever we are, it's conditioned and satipatthana can arise anywhere. So even when you're with bad company, still seeing visible object realities that can be known.
So it seems a very conventional way of understanding things to talk about, or well, evaluating which are the right friends or the right places.
When you like to see the bad friends, you think that you have some inclination towards that person?
Must be, if you want to see them.
Yes. Little by little.
Yes.
The Buddha said the Dharma was against the stream of the world, didn't he? Mm. It's very difficult to be in favourable conditions all the time.
So now when Ajahn was making these comments about meditation practices and asking these questions and you were nodding in agreement, if you were to not follow any of your meditation practices, for example, the focusing on Vedana or using any of the other tools, what difficulty or what problem would it cause for you?
I suppose I've got to use them as a kind of base. I mean, especially wearing robes. The thing is to reduce the internal chatter and to foster a more wholesome state of mind.
I think that the best should be Panya only, because the teachings of the Buddha helps the other to understand reality. Otherwise, no need to understand anything at all. So the base of all knowledge must be the understanding, right understanding from the very beginning. Otherwise, it belongs to other teacher.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. I felt over the last few years more and more alienated from what's going on around me in that sense. And that's part of why I want, you know, when I come back from the Vasa to go to a very quiet place, because I've already seen in a busy temple that what's going on around me doesn't seem to have any relationship to me or my life at all. It's...
Is there anything in the Vinaya that says a monk can't learn from a lay person?
No.
No, right?
No.
Maybe as you say, mana, or
yeah, just
an excuse.
Yeah, it's just
in fact, there's a Vinaya rule about taking food from people who have attained stages of enlightenment, lay people, being a burden on them.
And in truth, Panya itself is not layman or monk at all.
Yeah.
Because the triple gem, Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, Sangha means Aryan.
That's right.
Person. No matter lay man or monk.
When Bhante says, well, for him, when he's following his meditation practice, there's less kilesa, and you respond by saying, well, the most important is right understanding. Well, we often have this discussion on our list. People will say, well, they agree, everyone knows that right understanding is the highest. But if there are no conditions for right understanding to arise, then they feel they better follow a practice in order to...
Yeah.
It's okay for us, maybe we don't have strong anger and aren't about to go mad or something, but for them, if there's not enough understanding, they feel they need to have a tool or they need to do something just to be able to cope or just to be able to keep the lid on in their daily life.
Why not
study? I mean, I'm thinking of when I have to do things like wash clothes or walk somewhere or something like that, I just feel that by observing sensation or whatever, at least that is present moment and it's real. At least that is what is happening at the moment.
But it's not the self who is doing that?
I mean, I don't go around thinking I'm feeling this or I'm doing this, but I mean, yes, I guess it's...
Somewhere, it doesn't seem to go away. Can we be sure that that's kusala?
Probably not, but I don't know of anything else yet that I can do that works.
I think that word practice comes from the Pali patipatti,
yeah.
Right? And what is meant by patipatti? With apariyati, can there be condition for patipatti at all? So what is done is not patipatti, it's only practice, no understanding of pariyati at all.
Explanations are given. Explanations...
According to pariyati or not?
the thing is that what immediately follows from Pasa is Vedana, yes?
But what is Pasa?
Well, I understand it as contact. Contact.
Yes.
With
I or what?
With one of the six sense bases.
As long as there is no understanding of the characteristic of nama, how can we differentiate between Pasa and Manasikara and Civitindriya? Because they arise together.